This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. It's always been considered bad form to talk about religion and politics, especially at work. But these days, a growing number of businesses are making religion and politics a matter of company policy. In many places, previously frowned on religious practices, such as Bible study and prayer groups, are being allowed on site. In some cases, company managers promote their own religion in response to what they believe is providential calling. Is the Bible becoming the Bible of business practice? Gil Strickland is in the business of corporate ministry. He is here today to help us answer that question. He's the founder, president, and CEO of Marketplace Ministries, headquartered in Dallas, Texas. His firm sends men and women of the cloth to over 900 workplaces across the country in what he calls a proactive, personalized, faith-based employee assistant program. Gil Strickland, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Frank. It's always nice to hear your voice, and it's nice to be on WMUC. We appreciate your radio program.
Well, we do, too, and we appreciate our callers, and they can call us at 877-962-9862. Is religion commonplace? Is it welcome in your workplace? Would you embrace or reject the idea of faith-based assistance programs in your office? And what should be the role of spirituality and personal ideology in corporate culture? Let us know what you think. Give us a call at 877-962-9862. Gil, tell us about Marketplace Ministries. How does it work?
Well, Frank, for the last 227 years, the largest employer in America, with nearly 2 million employees, has used chaplaincy. And of course, you know, that's the United States military. And not only in the military, but in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, there's chaplains. And chaplains are just people who have a personal faith, but they're not out there to use their personal faith to harass anybody, to proselyte or to push religion on anybody, whether in the military or in the workplace. We're there simply to care for people, and that's what chaplains do. Today, with 70% of the American workforce not belonging to any congregation, not having a priest, a rabbi, a Muslim, cleric, or anybody else to care for them, they need a chaplain. They need somebody that buries them and marries them. And that's what we do in the American workplace today, and we've done it for two decades.
Now, your chaplain service, your corporation is a Christian corporation, Christian-based?
Absolutely. We are 76 denominations, and our 1,600 chaplains are of those 76 Protestant denominations. That's our staff. They're our employees, and they're going in the workplace every week. But just like the military, if you ever serve in the military, Frank, you know the chaplains there are to care for people, whether they have a religious faith or whether they don't. And with us, if a employee is a Muslim or a Buddhist and request that representation at their workplace to care for them, we will provide that at no expense to the company.
Now, when you say we will provide it, are your chaplains trained to provide counseling in other traditions, or
absolutely
do you refer
not.
Them?
We will provide them? A representative of that religious group, whatever it might be, to that employee. So consequently, a Vietnamese man died in one of our companies recently. He was Buddhist, and his family requested we get a Buddhist priest to do that funeral. And, of course, we did that. We use rabbis. We use all kinds of people in what we call our resource staff. So we have nearly 1,000 other representatives of various religious groups out there that we can call on when needed by the request of the employee. But today, Frank, to realize that more than 50% of the American workforce does not, they don't belong to a church. And about 70% don't go to church. Only, as you know, only about 35 to 36% of the American workforce ever goes to church, at anybody's church. But they still need help. They still need to be encouraged. They still need to be loved. So that's what we do. We take our favorite four-letter words to the workplace, not the ones that you've heard before. We take the words of love and help and hope and care, and that's what we're there. We're not there to turn a business into a church. We're there to love people.
What's the difference between spiritual counseling, religious counseling, and psychological counseling?
Yeah. Well, again, we're not counselors. That's not our role. We're not there as psychologists or psychotherapists. We're not there as counselors. Our role is pastoral care. Now, if somebody comes and wants to visit with us about an issue, and they choose to come to us, of which they do that by their personal choice, they do not have to do that. There's a volunteer program. But if they do come to me and ask me about an issue, then I will, from my perspective, of the Bible, I will give that answer to them. They can accept it or reject it, and they don't even have to come to see me.
And do they come to you, or do your chaplains make rounds and meet with people individually or as groups?
We make over nine, as you mentioned in the introduction, we make over 900 worksite visits a week, Frank. We're actually going into everything, 54 different types of companies. We're out on construction jobs. We're in banks. We're in automobile dealerships. We're in computer firms. We're in all kinds of companies all across America. In 35 states and 422 cities.
How has your business, tell me how it's grown over the past, because you started in 84, right?
We did.
Is it growing?
The first 10 or 12 years, Frank, it probably grew at and I'm not bragging, I'm just sharing, it grew at 4 or 5%. The last 8 to 10 years, it's grown at anywhere from 30% to 17% every year. So we're seeing a tremendous interest in caring for people from a pastoral care perspective.
We're joined now by Preston Foster. He's the Executive Director of Communications and Public Affairs at the Educational Testing Service in Princeton, New Jersey. He's got more than 25 years' experience in public and private sectors, and he's focused on public policy and leadership. Preston, welcome.
Good to be with you, Frank.
We are reading about, and you just heard Gil Strickland talk about, the increase in interest in chaplaincy and some kind of spiritual presence in the workplace. Is that your finding? Is that happening, do you think?
Well, it's really a razor's edge. It's a large question, religion in the workplace, but it's timely because I think we as Americans have been ignoring the obvious, and that is that religion is a major part of a lot of folks' lives, and particularly with the stresses that are present in the workplace today, it's unavoidable that this become a subject of discussion. It seems as though we're walking a razor's edge, because at the same time, we want folks to maximize their personal development in the workplace. There are also needs of the business that have to do with pragmatism and seeking the largest common denominator, and also the danger of unintended results that might result from the implication that religion is important to my employer, whether I'm religious or not.
Well, are you suggesting then that what are you suggesting? What are some of the, you say unintended consequences, but maybe you have some in mind?
Yes. I think it's common knowledge that the way you move up in organizations largely is through relationships, through networks, through mentors, and through those types of power bases. And if your employer is implying that religion is an important part of their construct, there could be unintended informal exclusions based on those networks that might be based on religion.
Gil Strickland, do you sense that's a problem in the companies that hire you?
Well, I'd like to just give a confirmation of something that Preston said in his earlier remarks, that religion is already in the workplace. Even though a great number of Americans don't go to church today, being, I think, about 36 or 37% go once a week, and most of those 15% do not go to church where they belong, religion is already there. Faith is a basic part of America and has been since our founding fathers established this country for the free exercise of religion or for the choice of not having a religious faith. And I gave 37 years of my life in the United States military to guarantee that Preston or you or any of your listeners would never have to have a religion if they did not choose to have one. So consequently, I know about the separation of church and state. I gave my life to that. On the other hand, what Preston also said concerning negative impacts of religion in the workplace because you might have a chaplain there, we have not seen that over the last 20 years. We've been doing this for, this is our 21st year. We have, as I mentioned earlier, 1,600 chaplains spread across the United States. And you know, we have not had a complaint. We have not had people saying that unless you go see the chaplain, you don't get promoted. And I think we'd all agree in corporate America today that we need more morals. We need more ethics. And whether it's based on the Quran of honesty, integrity, or whether it's based on the Bible and the Jesus and the Sermon on the Mount, whether it's based on Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, in the Old Testament, integrity is tremendously needed in America today.
Well, of course, the question arises, Gil, what if you're one of those who doesn't believe that what we need is more ethics?
I mean, again, I think you've seen that in Enron. I think you've seen that in Westcom. I think you've seen that in the greed and the dishonesty of corporate America. I don't think we need more of that. I think most Americans today would agree, whether they have a faith or not, that you need to build your life on some kind of moral base, that you don't cheat on your wife and you don't cheat on the government and you don't cheat on your employer, and its employer doesn't cheat on you.
Preston Foster, you talked about this being on a razor's edge, suggesting there is some balance that we could strike in trying to meet the spiritual, which is something other than psychological needs of employees. Do you think that's true?
Well, I think it's possible. I think we have to be very careful in doing this, and it sounds to me as though Gil's organization is doing wonderful things. But we have to differentiate between ourself and our roles. I think what Gil is targeting and folks like him is the development of the person, the support of the individual, as opposed to expanding that role to religion supporting the business.
Well, we will talk more about this delicate balance between religion and work and its place in corporate America, and we'll take a look at some of the legal aspects as well as your phone calls at 877-962-9862 when the State of Things continues. Support for the State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners who support WUNC. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We're talking today about the role of religious life in the workplace. Joining us are Gil Strickland, founder and president and CEO of Marketplace Ministries. Preston Foster is the executive director of communications and public affairs at the Educational Testing Service in Princeton, New Jersey. And joining us now is Catherine Fisk. She's a professor at Duke University Law School. Catherine Fisk, welcome.
Thank you.
Heard our conversation. We've been talking a little bit with Gil Strickland, who offers ministers in the workplace, and some of Preston Foster's concerns about striking the balance about religion in the workplace. What does the law say?
Well, the law makes it illegal to discriminate in employment on the basis of religion. And, of course, the line to be drawn is when allowing an employee or encouraging an employee freely to exercise his or her religion winds up excluding or making other workers who might have a different religion or be entirely secular feel unwelcome.
That sounds like a pretty subjective case. I mean, possibly a very difficult case, I suppose, for an employee wanting to bring suit to bring.
It is. The law in this area, you might think of it in terms of sexual harassment. And for a long time, society couldn't agree on when what one person might think of as a harmless joke or might think of as an innocent request to have dinner or to go on a date was perceived by the other employee as being threatening, as making him or her feel deeply uncomfortable. When employers introduce religion in the workplace, when they encourage employees to engage in prayer or especially proselytization, you run the same danger that what the religious employee thinks is perfectly innocuous, the employee who is a member of a different religion or no religion at all feels as making him or her deeply uncomfortable.
All right. Gil Strickland, I want to get back to you because, of course, we're not talking about, in the case of your service, Marketplace Ministries, necessarily proselytizing. We're talking about people coming to you. What kinds of concerns do they come to you with?
Well, I'd like to respond to something that Counselor Fisk said in her remarks as well. I'm not an attorney. We have a son who is an attorney and a judge in a criminal district court, but the law also makes it open for all religions in the workplace as well as no religion. And the key point that she emphasized was the fact that it is open to everybody and there's no pressure. There is no reward for using a chaplain. There is no punishment for not using them. And where everybody is treated equal. See, we've been doing this for 21 years. We have logged 1.4 million paid contracted service hours with secular companies. We've been looked at by the EEOC, and we have been examined by the ACLU and some of the largest law firms in America. And so what we're doing is not only legal, but it's being approved and blessed by both the secular mindset, the non-religious mindset, as well as the religious mindset. Because we're not there to harass people, we're not there to proselyte people, we're not there to push religion, we're not there to set the business into a church. We're simply there to love people. And what makes me love people is my personal faith. But I'm not going to use that as a harassment for you. I'm going to use that as a motivation for me.
Well, let me ask Catherine. Let me ask Catherine Fisk about that. Does having a ministry in the workplace, one that in this case is Christian based, does that or could that imply some kind of implicit pressure on employees to use the service or a suggestion of their religious belief?
It could. It all depends on the context. For example, if an employer in very sweet, religiously motivated concerns about my well-being came to me and suggested that were I only to find Jesus, I would feel happier in the workplace, I personally, because I'm Jewish, would find that deeply offensive. And I think that the problem is that people in the majority religion tend not to understand that minority religions, whether that's being Muslim or being a different branch of Christianity or being Jewish or Shinto or any of the others, may find the invitation, religious overtures, to be offensive even when they are utterly well-meaning and motivated out of love or concern or whatever.
Gil Strickland, had you?
Well, we've been doing this 21 years. We're caring for 90,000 employees now and 225,000 family members. What the attorney just said has not been a problem in our companies, 265 of them, and they're not all run by religious people. But all of the people that we work with and for are people that have a concern for others. They want to value their people. They want to love their people. They want to encourage their people. And they believe the best way to do that is to have chaplains. And
let me just stop you there.
We're Christian-based, we do use every other religion of the employee that requests that.
But you acknowledge, it does strike me that some of this is out of your hands, that you can make your service available and intend what you do, but you could be hired to an employer who may have a very different idea about how they'd like to use you.
Well, again, we have a written contractual agreement of what we do and what we don't do. And that's agreed before we ever walk through the front door. So we have that agreement up front, and that has not been a problem. If we were just starting this, then you could debate with me about whether it works or not. But for a company and for a service that's been doing it for over two decades, and we have not had a legal problem, not one. We have never been sued. Our program has never been sued. No company that ever used us has been sued. And there's never been a legal charge brought against one of our chaplains. Now, I may have to call you this afternoon and tell you that that has changed as of today. But up till now, that has not been the case.
877-962-9862 is the number to call. Michael is on the line from Pinehurst. Hello, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I've been listening to the conversation, and although I agree with the idea that business ethics are important, I worked for a company, a high technology company in Southern California that had a very strong Mormon presence in the management, and I'm ex-Mormon, and I noticed that it really wasn't meant to exclude, but involuntarily it did. I noticed that when we would get new employee applications, they struggled with people of color, they struggled with Jewish employees, they struggled with non-married employees, they couldn't see them fitting in. And without asking religion, without being, you know, without making a litmus test, as it were, it was that old standard of, I'm not comfortable if they're not in my sort of line of sight, is that the diversity factor just sort of melted away. And it was there and present regardless. It was the strong focus of the religion just bled over into employee relations, whether they meant for it to or not.
Now, in this case, though, you're talking about an employer who him or herself had a strong religious conviction.
Right, and tended to hire people of mm-hmm. similar religious convictions. They were recruited from church quite frequently. So most of the people who were there had that same religious bent.
Catherine Fisk, what's the law say about that, if particularly if it's a privately held company? Do I have the right to show some kind of religious preference if that's my bent?
No, you do not. Most the federal law prohibits discrimination on the basis of religion by any employer who employs over 15 employees. In California, it's prohibited to discriminate on the basis of religion by any employer who has more than 5 employees. And so it doesn't matter whether it's motivated by something benign or something malign. Preferring one employee over another on the basis of religion is absolutely illegal.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Michael, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. And joining us now is Craig Coker, who is the Dean of Chapel at Duke University. Craig, welcome.
Frank, it's good to be with you.
We talked a few months ago about a growing need for spirituality on college campuses. Now here we are looking at what's happening at the corporate level. Does this sound familiar to you?
It does sound familiar. It's a fascinating and complicated conversation that you have been having, but it sounds familiar. I think one of the reasons, you know, there's this sort of this rising trend in people of all ages who are interested in spirituality. It may not be traditional religion, but it's certainly some sense of spirituality. And my sense in that is that because we kind of look around the world and we see it as a pretty scary place right now. It's, you know, it's a country at war. There are threats of terrorism. There's a great deal of economic anxiety. And a lot of that is going to bleed over into the workplace, which may affect will certainly affect the culture and may affect how people think about spiritual matters.
Well, Preston Foster, you know, there have been scary times and difficult times before in American history, but the workplace has always been seen as some place separate from, you know, home life and personal life. What's different now, do you think, that the religious and spiritual belief is being brought into the workplace and being a place where this can be worked through, when before it was seen as your problem, you just need to deal with it at home and not bring it into the workplace?
Well, I think past the phenomenon of the yuppie years, when people in the 80s and early 90s, when people dedicated their lives fully to their careers and saw that after the fact, and I'm just speaking also from my personal experience, that careers don't love you back, that there are unforeseen things that can bring both you and your family down if you overemphasize your career. People are looking for more depth in their lives and more balance. And religion is a normal place to turn. And again, employers are more prone to want to develop the full person. They want people to self-actualize. They encourage authenticity. And when you do that, it's unavoidable that you talk to people's spirituality. And so you have conversations about religion. And then, obviously, there's a big evangelical move in the United States. And that, again, is hard to separate. I'm a Christian myself, and you're obligated as a Christian, and I'm going back to the differentiation between self and role. In my personal religion as a Christian, I'm obligated to proselytize. But when you bring that to the business or to the marketplace, that obligation is inappropriate. And so, again, you go back to this, the razor's edge and the difficulty of bringing religion to the workplace and yet balancing it.
Well, Gil Strickland, I never let you answer the second part of my question earlier. As founder and CEO of Marketplace Ministries, what kinds of concerns do people bring to your chaplains?
Frank, that's a great question, because we say people are in one of four categories and they change all the time, and that is they've got a problem, they just had a problem, they're getting ready to have a problem, or they're causing a problem. And that's true for all of us, whether it's a radio announcer host at a wonderful show like State of Things, or whether it's me, a chaplain. You know, we all have problems. And so consequently, the main issues today in America, which I'm sure that Dr. Forrest would agree on, is family, family relationships, marriage, raising children, you know, weak marriages. The family issues, that's the things that are the most pressing concern. Secondly, we see things such as finances, the money aspects, especially for people that don't make a lot of money, and which is most Americans with a minimum wage what it is today. Those are issues. Other things such as conflicts of race, you know, the race issue, it has not been solved in America. We still need to work on that. But when you've got African-American chaplains in a plant visiting with everybody, not just African-Americans, and you've got Hispanic chaplains, you've got Russian chaplains, Lithuanian chaplains, and those people are bringing a love to the workplace, it even helps solve the racial problem. And so consequently, all these issues that are being dealt with, they're being dealt with at work. They're not left at home when somebody goes to work, and that's why it's important to have somebody there that cares for others and reaches out to people 24 hours a day.
All right, Gil Strickland, founder and president and CEO of Marketplace Ministries, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you, sir. Enjoyed visiting with all of you.
All right, Craig Coker, acting dean at Duke Chapel. What are some of the difficulties of trying to achieve what you heard Gil Strickland talk about, trying to maintain these balances and deal with these issues in a way that doesn't threaten and doesn't intimidate workers who may not be prone to choosing religion or choosing a Christian religion?
Well, I mean, I would think, gosh, it's a huge question.
That's why I asked you, Craig, because I knew you were
right.
The guy.
That's why you think I can come on. I think, for one, I think it's really hard. I think it's really hard for people to talk with one another about personal things in the workplace because we don't know. We want to be aware of a professional and personal dichotomy that's been around for so long. And yet we also are close to these people that we work with. They're our friends, perhaps, outside of work. We have to work together. We're working towards common goals. We have things in common that sort of creates a tension-filled relationship. Are they a friend? Are they a colleague? Are they both? And so the ability to be able to, to have, a third party, a chaplain of some kind who would be there to help build relationships and build continuity between the personal and professional and build some community, if you will, amongst the workplace, I could see some real positive things in that.
Well,
but also the dangers that that Dr. Fisk brought up and you talked about earlier also seem very scary at the same time.
Well, let me get a brief clarification from Preston Foster, because it sounds to me, Preston, like you're suggesting we need to really maintain that dichotomy between the role, as you suggest, and the person. And I think what I just heard Craig Coker say is we've got to bridge that in the workplace, or we may not be able to move forward as a worker or a person.
Well, that's what makes it difficult, because once you start to open up about religion, it is hard to maintain that self-role separation.
I guess my question is, and forgive me for interrupting, is,
sure.
You know, should we be separating ourselves or do we need to, is this a matter of integrating?
Well, again, I think unless you separate the two, you open up a Pandora's box in terms of problems, because if people in power, people in authority in the workplace, let it be known that a certain set of values are important to them, it implies that those values should also be important to you if you're going to move up. It also complicates things. Like if you are working in the human resources organization and you are, for example, a Christian and you don't believe in same-sex relationships and you're called on to implement same-sex benefits, can you do that unless you separate between yourself and your role?
Craig, what about that? Is there clearly there's a professional concern here, and particularly when it comes to advancement, but I think you're talking about not being able to separate the person from the worker in sort of a deeper sense.
Yeah, and I guess I'm really trying to probe that. You know, when in sort of your opening question, kind of, you know, what's going on in the workplace that people are seeking this spirituality, I think it's because in our own lives we are living such fragmented lives. And it's a reflection, I do think it's some reflection of the world around us, that we feel like the world around us is falling into a little chaos, and it's, you know, it's scary. And some of that is overly sensationalized, I think, by the media, and which makes it worse. Not that you all are doing that, but generally sort of mainstream media, I think, over-sensationalizes a lot of what happens. And then we experience that coming at us, this fragmentation of the world around us. And then inside, we feel sort of broken and confused. And I guess what I see people really wanting to do is saying, how do I become a whole person? How do I be a friend and a father and an engineer at the same time? Why is it that I get up in the morning and I'm, you know, and I have breakfast with my family or whatever, and then I come to work and I feel like I got to be all business, and yet this huge part of my life that may be informed by faith is back at home? We don't do this, for example, I'm just kind of thinking off the top of my head, we wouldn't do this in a workplace in terms of health care, for example. If one of our colleagues was in the hospital and diagnosed with cancer, well, that becomes a really personal thing that it's just basic, that we would want to rally around as colleagues and figure out how to be supportive. And there's a professional line that's going to really get blurred in a hurry.
We will talk more about the blurring of that line in the United States, and we'll talk about tolerance in the workplace and ways in which that is expressed. Take more of your calls at 877-962-9862. When the State of Things continues, stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We're talking today about the role of spirituality and personal ideology in the corporate culture, and taking your calls at 877-962-9862. Today on the program, Craig Coker, acting dean of the Duke Chapel and director of religious life there. Preston Foster is executive director of communications and public affairs at Education Testing Service in Princeton, New Jersey. He's had more than 25 years' experience in the private sector, focusing on public and policy and leadership. And Catherine Fisk is a professor of law at Duke University. And we'd like to welcome Bob Page right now. He's the founder and CEO of Replacements Limited in Greensboro, honored as one of the 25 most influential gay and lesbian executives in corporate America by the Gay Financial Network. Bob Page, thanks for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you, Frank. Glad to be here.
Your company has been cited a number of times for an open and welcoming policy toward gay and lesbian couples, toward gay and lesbian employees, and a policy of tolerance across the board. And tell us a little bit about that and how that's worked.
Well, you know, I'm not speaking as an authority, but just someone who's an employer who really wants to have a great workplace. And at Replacements Limited, we were very proud to be selected by the Triad Business Journal as the best place to work in the Triad. And we want it to be a good place to work for all of our employees. We have employees from at least 15 different countries. We have over 100 former Yugoslavs who work there. We have probably in the neighborhood of 100 gay or lesbian employees. And we just want to make it the best possible place for our employees to work. And I do feel like that without trying to do so, that we have attracted a number of employees who wouldn't feel comfortable working in other environments because of possible harassment. I've had employees to tell me that it's the first place that they've worked that they didn't endure some type of harassment. And we feel like it's a benefit, and we're very proud to be able to offer that kind of environment. And we do feel like it's one of the most diverse workforces in the Triad area.
You heard through the course of this conversation the delicate balance now that seems to have emerged, the need to find this balance, and that one person's comfort level becomes another person's discomfort level. Is providing a place where being openly gay is a comfortable place uncomfortable for people who find that that's not the kind of lifestyle that should be approved of?
Well, I do think there have been people who have felt uncomfortable in that type of environment. But we do tell all prospective employees that that there are a number of gay people who work there and that it's a gay-owned business. And I do remember on one occasion we had a lady who started to work there, and a week later she resigned, saying her husband, who was a police officer, didn't want her working out there because there were a number of gay people there.
877-962-9862 is the number to call. Nathan is on the line from Greensboro. Hello, Nathan.
Hello.
You have a question for us? Yeah.
One of your guests commented that would a Christian working as a human resource director possibly have a problem implementing a gay and lesbian open policy, benefit policy to all the employees? And as a Christian, that they may have a problem and it might deem it necessary to quit. To that I say, capital bogus. Number one, that human resource director does not own the company. Therefore, if they have any qualms with anything the company is doing, then they can end up quitting. So I'm a Christian where I am. There are some things that my employer does that it makes me wonder. But these are the policies that this company has implemented. And I can either get with the program, complain about it to try to make a change, or do as I'm told. The idea of also as well making it known that you need to behave spiritually in a particular way to make your way up the company, I find there again that is not indeed godly at all. You need to maybe go to my church or attend prayer meetings there at the office. No, that doesn't work in the public workplace. Maybe at a church where the secretary is going to be representing the church, maybe. But in the workplace, no. And I'm saying that not just as a Christian, and not that I say that this is going to make me a better person, but an ordained elder too. That doesn't fly. With regards to sharing with people who do not share your particular beliefs, and my Christian beliefs actually make me the person, even at work, if a person does not subscribe to so-called religion, the thing for me to keep in mind is the way that Jesus did things. He didn't throw religion in their face. He got to know the individual. And when you get to know the individual, you find that there are points that you have in common that are not so-called religious. If nothing more than you may both be parents. You may both live in the same neighborhood and share the same hobby. And as you get to know individuals, then you end up tearing down walls without even knowing it, and you end up getting acquainted, and that person becomes more malleable, so to speak, to anything else about your life.
Well, I appreciate the comments, Nathan, and I'd like to get some responses. Catherine?
Yes, Nathan, this is Frank. This is Preston Foster again.
Yeah.
I believe I'm the person who raised those issues. And I raised them, again, to discuss the need for differentiating between self and role. Not that the human resources administrator had to believe one way or another in order to execute, but that it's necessary to separate what you believe from what the organization demands in order to be effective. And once you bring religion into the workplace, these challenges are unavoidable.
We talk about religion, and now we're talking about something else, an open policy as well. In this case, Bob Page, an open tolerance for gay employees. And in that case, you really have to wear your ideology on your sleeve. It's not about keeping your role separate from your role as a business person, separate from that part of yourself. And I just wonder if that in some ways, can it hurt business? Does it affect business at all because that's a part of your policy?
Well, absolutely it has. We've had customers who said they didn't want to do business with replacements because we've been supportive of gay and lesbian organizations. And we understand that not everybody is approving of that. And, you know, we're certainly prepared for that. But, you know, I would want to mention that by no means is Replacements Limited anti-religion whatsoever. We do have a counselor on staff who is a Presbyterian minister himself, and you know, married and has children of his own, and he's there for our employees and you know for their own mental health, and we provide that as a free service to our employees.
Yeah, I guess the question is not so much whether there's a dichotomy between these two, but whether or not certain kinds of tolerance then suggest a way of doing business or preferences that in some ways pressure an employee or lead employees to feel that they have to act in a certain way or believe certain things.
Well, I really don't think in our case that we certainly don't try to pressure anybody to do anything there. And there's very little conversation about anything gay or lesbian, that we just provide a work environment where people can be themselves no matter who they are and can feel comfortable working there without fear of any type of discrimination. And we're not trying to force anybody to think any way that they don't want to or to be in any uncomfortable situation.
Greg Coker, I'm going to give you another one of those difficult questions. Has it come to a point in this society where we have become so conscious of our roles and our ideology and our preferences that we can't really provide a place where people can unconsciously be who they are and be comfortable? We have to consciously set out the provisions for those who will be protected and those who will be tolerated. If you see what I'm saying, do we have to be very self-conscious about our tolerance?
I think in some ways that's right, and I think in some ways in a workplace, you know, maybe some of this is you know a management expert could teach us something about what how leadership looks and how leaders and managers sort of set a tone of a culture within a corporate environment. But I do think there needs to be some sense of. Hey, if we're going to respect and welcome everybody, then that's got to be clear. And there's got to be clarity of communication within a staff that when somebody feels like somebody else crossed a line and entered a personal space or entered a religious space or felt pressured to be religious because of somebody else on staff, that there's got to be a culture in which that kind of stuff can be talked about in a way that's not threatening. And that goes into huge questions of power and, you know, especially kind of power dynamics within an organization and how communication flows.
Let's go to the phone. Sonny's on the line from Rocky Mount. Hi, Sonny.
Hi. I had a question for your guest that maybe would be helpful. And that is, as a medium business owner, if I sought to recruit my employees based on certain principles of, say, honesty and integrity, and hard work, and maybe even family values, because of the attributes that would bring into my workplace, and that in turn ended up bringing in a certain number of religious people as opposed to fewer people who weren't religious. Would that then constitute a certain religious preference on my part that would be in violation of any laws?
Catherine Fisk, Duke Law School.
Well, it really depends, I think, on what you mean when you say you're recruiting people based on family values. Obviously, nobody, religious or non-religious, has a monopoly on hard work, honesty, integrity. I think that there is a tendency among very religious people to believe that their honesty, their integrity, their business ethics comes from their religion, but I think that's because that's a very important part of their identity. Non-religious people find a foundation for their honesty and their integrity simply from their general sense of ethics. I think the more troubling thing about the list that you gave is what you mean when you say family values. If you're hiring only people who are married, in many jurisdictions, that's illegal. If you're hiring only people who have a particular set of views about either, you know, homosexuality, abortion, et cetera, that is unlawful in many jurisdictions because it winds up discriminating based on political preferences.
Thank you, Sonny. Did that answer your question?
Thank you
very much for the call. Catherine, let me stay with you for a minute. Then it sort of gets to this question, too, about how far we go in defining what is tolerated. And when we do that, and this almost gets back to the affirmative action question in some ways, but, you know, can we define what is tolerable, and then does that become a preference in a sense?
I think when we live in a pluralistic society that is committed to inclusion of many people of different religions, races, national origin, gender, we're committed to preferring tolerance over intolerance. I think that's a decision that we made a long time ago legally in this country. I think it does, in a certain way, limit the ability of an employer to say, you know, we need to foster certain subgroup affinities in this workplace. I think that a black-owned business that says, you know, we need to sort of celebrate black culture in our workplace is going to be a workplace that isn't comfortable for non-blacks. And I think that that, you know, one can have as much affinity as you want on basis of race or religion or national origin, but it probably needs to stay outside the workplace in order that we not do what a caller who described having worked at a majority Mormon firm in Southern California felt, which is that their desire to create community around religion wound up excluding the non-religious.
Let's go to Carrboro. Kathy's on the line. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in a 12-step recovery, recovering addict, and you know, the 12th step of the program is that anonymity is a spiritual foundation of our recovery, and it's been very successful for decades now, as you probably know, for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the jokes that, you know, a lot of times we joke about how we wish that the workplace had that principle, I just sort of wanted to ask.
Well, tell me a little bit, just very, very briefly, what you mean by that, anonymity.
Well, basically that, for example, instead of saying God, we, you know, people generally say higher power,
mm-hmm.
And that basically that whatever issues somebody has on a personal level, that they, you know, whether they talk about it in a meeting place or with their sponsor or whatever, that it does not leave that place, and I guess I feel that there's a great deal of threat in the workplace, whether one is non-religious or religious or gay or straight or whatever, or if they have marital problems or whatever, that they can't bring it to the workplace as it is in this country in many places, because their job gets threatened, because you know, the boss gets told, or people gossip, or whatever, because there's not that safety net of anonymity and confidentiality.
So you'd need a place to go, but a place where you could be confidential and make sure that the word didn't get out. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Yes. Very briefly, Craig Coker, do we need to then... Kathy's question suggested to me perhaps a need to change our vocabulary somewhat so that we don't use words that immediately inflame and, in a sense, define us too narrowly.
There may be some of that would help have a culture in a workplace. I mean, I keep kind of thinking about what does a culture look like in a workplace that allows for great productivity and efficiency, and but also a sense of we really want to be there. We like the people that working with. We're working for a common goal, not just myself. I mean, some of these sound like just really good leadership principles. But and some of them may go back to spiritual practices that could be drawn out from lots of different religious traditions. I mean, I think about kind of issues of rest or Sabbath keeping in different traditions, talk about the need for reflection on what we're doing and why we're doing it in order that we can get back into it and do it more effectively. So maybe some kind of vocabulary conversations about that, you know, a boss
All
may
right.
say, look, why don't you take a little bit of time off? You seem burned out. Whereas a spiritual person might say, take some Sabbath, you know, go reflect on this.
I'm going to take about 23 hours before I return to this program, Craig, and I want to thank you very much for joining us. Craig Coker, Acting Dean of the Duke Chapel, Director of Religious Life. Also, Bob Page, Founder and CEO of Replacements Limited. Catherine Fisk, Professor of Law at Duke Law School, and Preston Foster, Executive Director of Communications at Education Testing Service. Thank you all. Thanks for listening to The State of Things. You can drop us an email at sot@wunc.org. Support for The State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Frank Stachow.